That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, live on FUBAR Radio, and we are here for another week worth of finance tips, finance experience, financial, you know, just financially getting better together one step at a time. I've started to realize this on each of these shows. As much as I'm trying to make you better with money, I think I'm slowly actually getting better with the money as well, which is quite nice because, like I said, what we do every single week here is we do a range of different things and hopefully one of them resonate with you and actually make you better with your money. We bring in the news. We discuss the most relevant and latest topics going on within the economy that aren't boring but actually affect the money in your pocket. And then my favourite part of the show always is we bring in incredible guests, experts, individual, you know, people who have their own experiences with money in life. They share their tips, their advice, like I said, their experiences, and together we get better that way as well. And so who do we have coming up this week? Well, we've got a bit of a recognisable face, actually, from a few of the previous episodes in Brian Burns, Moneybox's head of personal finance. You guys should know Moneybox by now. They're a pretty big app here in the UK. And if you're not in the UK, well, apologies. And then we've also got Sabrina Grant, a sustainable stylist and founder of the Second Life Collective, here to probably give you some tips in case you are, I would say, struggling with a few of your shopping habits heading towards, well, probably the most expensive part of the entire year, which is Christmas and Black Friday, which is, as of my watch, I believe, in about a week's time. A week and a half? Is it this Friday or next Friday? We'll figure it out together. Regardless, the advice still holds exactly the same that you're going to get throughout the show. So, without further ado, let's dive into what's actually been going on this week that will affect the money in your pocket. And one of the biggest expenses we all have on a monthly basis is our bills. I mean, if you live at home and you don't have to contribute to the bills, well, well done to you for being young. But if you are a little bit older and you're having to, you know, live for yourself, one of your biggest bills is probably your energy bill. And over the past few years, it has probably beaten the living daylight out of you. Over the past, like, 3 years or so, energy bills basically shot up. The government brought in some level of cap, and I'll go into the detail of exactly what happened. They had to cap it off because of huge amount of things basically happened at once, from COVID to the war in Ukraine and all that kind of stuff. Basically, the price of energy shot through the roof. It has now settled. When I say settled, I mean come down to a more, is the word reasonable? We'll go with the word reasonable. Can you say reasonable more times in one sentence? I'm not sure you can. It's a more reasonable price. But of course, we still do get kind of monthly predictions as to which direction the energy price cap does go. Now, the price cap is the price cap which is sent, which is set by Ofgem every kind of so often, which kind of limits how much energy companies can actually force you to pay when it comes to your energy. Now, remember, a lot of the figures that I'm about to tell you are average. So if you are literally in your house turning every single switch on and trying to create, I don't know, some kind of whatever with the energy supply in your house, you will pay more than the average, and same goes the opposite way. If you shut off all your lights and turn your heating off, whatever, for the next month or 2 months, you will be below the average. But let's go into some of the figures. Well, the warning is this. There is going to be a disappointing rise in energy bills this January. I feel like this is like the standard news we're used to. What is this disappointing rise? Well, it is only a rise of 1% from the current price cap. So whoever's written that title of disappointing, I think that they probably should, you know, maybe regulate kind of the wording that they use. It's forecast to rise to £1,736 a year for the average fuel bill. That is up from £1,717 a year. So roughly £20 of an increase predicted in January. Obviously, any increase, not really something that we're after, but it's better to be aware that that is round the corner if it means you need to kind of pivot your budget for, you know, January and the month ahead. If you are someone that doesn't budget but has that potentially on their radar to start after the new year, you know, one of your New Year's resolutions might be to start budgeting. Well, that's something that you'll want to put into your budget and something that you'll continually want to keep tracking, this price cap there from the energy regulator Ofgem. But before I mentioned to you about how it went crazy over the past 3 years, so what did exactly happen so I can give you some context? Well, before the war broke out in Ukraine and Russia, that's been one of the biggest factors because Russia is a huge supplier of energy. And of course, a huge number of restrictions got put on anything coming out of Russia after they started the war with Ukraine. Sorry, we're not going to get political here, so I'm going to move away from that topic for now. But the average price of energy was, for the average household, was £1,216. So you can see that over the period of 3-4 years since that started, we have gone up almost £500. That's almost a 50% rise. Pretty crazy stuff. However, during the height, the worst part of that kind of period, the price cap would have gone up to £4,000 had the government not capped it at around £2,500. So that is the crazy effect that this world can have on the price of energy before the government actually have to intervene, step in and be like, well, if the price actually goes up that much, basically no one will be able to afford heating. So that kind of gives you a little bit of context. What's the prediction going forward from January? Well, they are expecting the price cap to drop in April and again in October of 2025. But one thing that is being made very apparent is that no one should really expect the price to go back down to the low 1,000s ever again, really. We're kind of set at this 1,700, 1,600, 1,800 number for now. So if someone is sitting there waiting for the prices to go back to what they were 4 or 5 years ago, I would probably stop waiting. One thing that I do want to do is not just share with you the news, but actually give you practical tips as to kind of how to react to this news. So if you are someone that's hearing this, even if it is just a 1% rise in the current price, and maybe you're currently struggling with this price without this 1% rise coming in January, here are some things that you can do over the winter, especially as we all start to turn our heating on, that will save you money when it comes to your energy bill. So number one, shorter and colder showers, okay? You don't need that steaming hot shower for 25 minutes if you're trying to save money on your energy bill. 100% you should be switching from baths to showers. That's just one of the most basic things you can do, but just a shorter, colder blast. Maybe it's a New Year's resolution for you to get into cold showers. That not only will wake you up, it will also save you money. Number two, lower that thermostat by even 1 degree. So if you're someone that's got it on to 21, 22, you actually only really need it between 18 and 20. So for every 1 degree that you drop your thermostat, you can actually drop your bill by 10%. The next is to avoid drying your clothes on radiators. This makes your radiators hugely inefficient and therefore will increase the price of your energy bill. Check your appliances' efficiency. So this isn't just the energy rating on the products that you own, but it's also some kind of subtle factors about how you use them. For example, if you have your fridge right next to your oven, probably not the best idea because your fridge is going to have to work twice as hard every time your oven turns on to cool the food down inside of it. What else have we got? Avoid preheating your oven. So this is something that a lot of people do. They turn on their oven and then they wait for it to get to the temperature before putting the food in. The advice here actually that's being given is put your food in as you turn it on, cook it for the right amount of time, turn your oven off, and then leave the food in to kind of keep cooking whilst your oven cools itself down. That's quite good. I might start that one myself. Use an air fryer. If you have an air fryer, they are hugely efficient. For example, a 600 grams worth of chicken will cost you 13p to fry in an air fryer and 18p to cook in an oven. And the little things do add up. And lastly, unplug your devices. Now, some people hugely hate that piece of advice, unplug your devices. But standby devices, so things that are basically plugged in with the switch on in your house, account for roughly 10% of your energy bill. So if you're looking for an easy way to save somewhere in the region of £170 on average per year, it might be worth going around and flicking off some of those switches when you're not using certain things around the house. There you go, bit of energy saving advice. We don't just here to tell you the news, we're here to react to it too. What else is happening? Well, this is an interesting one for your pizza lovers out there. The operator of Pizza Hut's restaurants in the UK are looking to raise more than £10 million to help it cope with the increased costs of tax rises on businesses businesses that were announced in last month's budget. So for those of you that want to cast your mind back to what seems like yesterday, but was actually a month ago, the budget had a huge impact on mid to large size businesses. Why in particular? Well, they raised national insurance paid by employers went from 13.8% to 15%. So they have to pay 15% of your wages national insurance to the government. And the amount they have to start paying that on went down from around 9,000 or was 9 thousand something something down to £5,000. So their bills went up by at least around £500-700 per employee. As you can see for Pizza Hut, clearly quite a bit more. Not just that, but particularly for the hospitality sector, the rise in the national minimum wage, which went up by 6.7% for over 20-year-olds and even more for 18 to 20-year-olds, also is a huge factor to increasing the costs for a lot of these companies. So they're looking to raise about £10 million. A lot of this, I believe, is to bring in more tech and, well, to replace essentially humans inside a lot of the Pizza Hut restaurants. So not only has this knock-on effect basically increased their bills, they're looking to therefore decrease their bills by decreasing the amount of people they employ. The other thing that you're going to start to see from a lot of businesses, such as Sainsbury's, M&S, BT, Wetherspoons, they've all said they're going to have to start passing these extra costs onto consumers by increasing the prices. As you can tell, business is not very happy with it, and you're starting to see real outcomes, essentially, of Rachel Reeves' budget announcement, a £10 million investment raise from Pizza Hut. There was actually a letter from over 200 companies that have said that this tax hike that has been announced last month on businesses is unsustainable, and they've warned that this would unquestionably cause closures of businesses, job losses, and rise in prices. So this is something to look out for, to be aware of over the coming months as companies start to adapt and, I suppose, implement changes according to the change in tax. This is only starting in April, by the way. So companies are going to start to make these decisions in the lead up to April 2025 when these laws actually come into place. And I suppose over the next 12, 18, 24 months, that's when we're actually going to start to see whether companies choose to go for cutting the costs of and the salaries of their employees or raising the price onto consumers. Because, I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Companies don't just normally swallow their own profits because, you know, the government have raised taxes. They are going to look to recount these losses themselves. I think we said on last week's show, the current prediction is of April 2025, companies are actually going to swallow about 40% of this tax rise. So anything extra they're paying to the government, they will probably cover about 40% of it immediately, with 60% being passed on to either people that work for them or for the people that are trying to buy from them. And down the line, in about 4 or 5 years' time, this number is actually going to drop to 20% that the company will kind of be covering and 80% passed on to consumers and workers. So as you can see, these tax rises, as much as they are a tax on businesses, they are a tax on all of us. Cool. There you go, guys. Up to date with the news. You've got a little bit of macroeconomics. You've got a little bit on how to save on your energy bills. I know that I've turned on the heating, so probably you guys have as well. And I will definitely be following some of those tips and tricks. You try say that. Anyway, stick around, because straight after this short little break, I'm being joined yet again by Brian Burns, one of my favorite guests on the show, Moneybox's head of personal finance.
Fubar Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. It's getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, "I got you, mate." It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think, of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the
crying,
truth.
Crying.
And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle.
It is.
I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister.
That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously they can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, here live on FUBAR Radio. Now, I want to give you some context quickly. According to Moneybox's own financial guidance research, 70% of Brits still don't invest. 25% of those with financial regrets say they regret not investing. And 31% of current investors regret not investing earlier in life. I think that all points in one direction. But here to discuss a lot of those statistics with me is a regular here on That Money Show now, Brian Burns, Moneybox's head of personal finance. Brian, how you doing?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Thanks for having me back on, Gabriel.
Absolute pleasure. So we're gonna have a little conversation about how people can best kind of stash away their cash for the future, you know, become a little bit inflation proof or even stagnation proof. So I do kind of want to dive straight into those statistics. I mean, this was your own, you know, financial guidance research. Any of that surprise you? Any of that shock you? Or was it as expected?
I think, unfortunately, not. I think the story around investing in this country is quite a familiar one to those of us kind of operating in this space. We are a nation of savers. We're actually reasonably good at saving and doing things like shopping around for the best interest rates that we can get on our savings. Unfortunately, for wide variety of reasons, that does not translate over to investing like it does in the US, for example, where they have a massive culture of investing. And I do think that's kind of holding us back, both individually from a personal finance perspective, achieving our medium and long-term goals, which investing can really help with. Also, probably as a country as well, because we know we're not investing as much as, say, for example, the US in our homegrown assets, for example. So it is a problem and one that we do need to solve both individually and probably wider as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really want people to kind of prick their ears up right now when you hear the word investing. Don't turn away from it. Don't be scared of it. Even listening to this, you know, 10-minute conversation that we're about to have is going to give you so much guidance and understanding of just how simple it is to start and how important it is to start. I mean, there's a reason why 31% of current investors regret not investing earlier in life. I would argue that statistic is probably much higher because everyone that I ask who is an investor seems to say, I just wish I'd even like a year or two because of the magic of compound interest. We'll get all into that in a second. But can you start off by introducing kind of who Moneybox are, what you guys do, the products you offer consumers, and especially how you're trying to help them ease into this world of investing?
Yeah, absolutely. So at its simplest, Moneybox is an app that helps you save, invest, and build wealth over time. We offer a range of products across saving, investing, but also home buying and retirement. And our aim is that everybody can hit their financial goals regardless of their starting point in life. So, for example, we have a huge amount of people saving with us for their deposit for their first home. So we have a product called a Lifetime ISA, which gives you up to £1,000 free from the government every year towards your first deposit with some caveats and rules, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later on. But we also have mortgage brokers here, for example, that will help you actually get your mortgage. So that goes all the way from your very first savings deposit towards your first home, all the way up to getting your first keys. And we do that for saving, investing, and retirement as well. probably the thing we were most well known for originally was rounding up your spare change and investing that spare change, those small amounts, into long-term investing. We have evolved from there. We now have over 1 million customers and 10 billion of assets. But those themes of starting investing little and often kind of carry on to everything that we do in the investing space, and really trying to break down those barriers that make people think investing is much scarier than it actually is.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant how many kind of companies have come into the market to literally do the one thing, which is democratize investing, democratize saving, democratize financial understanding of products and awareness. And I think Moneybox are an absolute leader when it comes to that kind of parity of both giving you the right tools, but giving you the right education. So you can put the two hand in hand. Like you said, you have specific things. That Roundup product was brilliant back in the day. But like you said, it had a fundamental core reason to it. It was just to literally hold someone's hand into the world of investing, which I love, because I think a lot of people do need that just to get them over that initial hurdle, bump. I want to ask you some questions that I get so often from my audience when it comes to investing. As much as I shout it down the throat about kind of all the benefits, how to do it, how to start, maybe they just need someone else to answer those questions. So number one, when is the right time to start thinking about investing?
I think a key word in that sentence is thinking about investing, because even if you're not ready to invest, and we'll talk about a couple of things that you should do before you actually start investing, but even if you're not ready, thinking about and learning about investing, there really is no there's no too soon on that side of things. It really is as early as you possibly can. I think you also touched on two really important things there. One is investing is nowhere near as complicated as you may think, kind of before you start learning about it. Apps like Moneybox and others have made it incredibly easy and incredibly simple, thankfully. And the other thing is, it will help you hit your medium and long-term financial goals sooner than you otherwise would have. You've mentioned our research there in terms of top financial regrets. Like, retirement is a big one where people just do not start thinking about it as early as they should do. And investing will help people retire earlier when it's done properly and done well. You should look at paying off high interest debt, so things like credit cards and loans, before you start investing. And you should also save up a bit of an emergency fund. But after that, it's just important to start little and often. So something like rounding up your spare change, or even £10 a week or £10 a month, whatever you can afford, that will really help build your knowledge and confidence. So if in the future you do have potentially a bit more that you can invest, it will all seem a little bit less scary if you've been investing for a smaller amounts from an early age. So as I say, there really is no too soon on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stress the part you said about it can just be rounding up your spare change or £10. Investing does not need you to pour in your life savings into a risky product where you're not sure if it's going to go one way or the other way. That's called gambling. And you're welcome to go to a casino if that's what floats your boat. But here we like to talk about long-term, kind of like strategic decision-making. And investing is a tool that, done the right way, you can diversify and mitigate risk. It's a really important thing to say. There is always inherent risk when you're kind of putting money, you know, somewhere that doesn't give you anything guaranteed. There is nothing guaranteed in investing. But all you can do is do more research, more understanding, and do things to lower your kind of risk tolerances. One of the most famous products that Moneybox offer is the Lifetime ISA. And Brian, you and I have had so many discussions over this, not just around the product itself, but more about the work that Moneybox are doing to advocate for the changes to the Lifetime ISA. Whilst it was a genius product when it came out, and to give a little bit of context, it is a product that allows you and helps you to save towards either retirement or, more commonly, a first-time property, where for every you can put up to £4,000 per tax year into the Lifetime ISA, and the government will give you a 25% bonus on top of whatever you contribute. But the property, if you are going down that route, has to be valued under £450,000. So my question for you isn't so much to explain it, but more are they still worth it?
I think you've done a cracking job explaining it there. So I think in terms of, is it still worth it? So Moneybox has, we believe, the largest community of first-time buyers in the UK. We speak to them every day via our mortgage brokers. We survey them incredibly regularly, and we recently launched a first-time buyer report looking into all of the factors that impact first-time buyers. So ability to get a mortgage, interest rates, all that sort of stuff, and also included, obviously, the lifetime ISA. The price cap, the £450,000 you mentioned, it's an issue we have been campaigning on for a couple of years now. But it is important for people to know that the cap actually impacts about 1% of aspiring first-time buyers today, so across the entirety of the UK. Obviously, when you're talking about £450,000 houses, they are typically more located kind of London and the southeast. And that's not to say we shouldn't keep trying to future-proof the cap, but the LISA is still brilliant for 99% of savers that are out there today when we go out and speak to our lifetime ISA customers. So I very much hope it will change. We and others, kind of including yourself, have been knocking on Treasury's door and the Chancellor's door for quite some time now. But so far, unfortunately, they have not budged. The price cap has been the same since the product launched back in 2017. And we all know what house prices have done over the last 6 or 7 years. So we do think they could make small tweaks to that going forwards, just to give people the confidence who are starting off saving for a deposit now, and maybe they are in London and the southeast, that it will still be fit for purpose for absolutely everybody when they come to use the money in the lifetime ISA for their deposit. So it's just something to really keep an eye on if you think you might be buying in an area where the property prices are up towards that price cap.
Yeah, I will share from personal experience. The lifetime ISA was relevant for me when I first looked to buy a property. I then decided to rent for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden my lifetime ISA, basically I've started to kind of move towards looking above that cap, and I suppose I'm part of that 1%. Very fortunate, but that's, I suppose, the price you pay when you want to live in London. Thanks, parents, for raising me here and making me love the city so much. That's my problem. Don't worry, everyone listening at home. I want to take another small pivot, still keeping on that topic of first-time buyers or potential future first-time buyers. There's been a lot of things going on with interest rates with the Bank of England. People, you know, are hearing about cuts. They're hearing at the same time that interest rates are still incredibly high. How should people be understanding how mortgage rates are affected by these constant changes from the Bank of England when it comes to the base rate?
Yeah, I think what's happened in the last kind of couple of weeks probably looks a little bit weird and confusing from the outside, because the Bank of England 2 weeks ago cut interest rates, so down, the base rate is 4.75% now. But actually, we've seen mortgage rates kind of creep up ever so slightly since that announcement, and that can be a little bit counterintuitive and a bit kind of frustrating. I think the important thing to understand is that how banks actually price their mortgages, the offers that they are willing to give to customers, are not priced on where interest rates are today. So it's not a case of the Bank of England cut rates today and then mortgage rates drop tomorrow, unfortunately. The way that the banks do it is more on expectations of where interest rates will be over the course of the next 5 years, which, if you're taking out a five-year mortgage, for example, you can see why that's important from the bank side of things. So what happened last time when the Bank of England met a couple of weeks ago, they said they expected inflation to be a little bit higher than previously thought, and therefore interest rates over the next couple of years might fall a little bit more slowly than expected. So banks have factored that in, and as instead of kind of cutting rates as the bank did, they've looked at the next 5 years and said, okay, interest rates might be a little bit higher than we thought, so actually mortgage rates have crept up a little bit. They're nowhere near as high as they were a couple of years ago. They're not quite as low as they were, anywhere near as low as they were maybe 5 or 6 years ago, kind of somewhere in the middle. But yeah, perhaps a little bit kind of counterintuitive when the Bank of England is cutting interest rates not to see that immediately come through on mortgage rates.
Very well explained. I genuinely don't think I could have done that better myself, Brian. The final question for you. I think since Magic Radio are probably started to play their basically Christmas song after Christmas song after Christmas song already, I think I'm allowed to start bringing up the topic of Christmas and ask you, do you have any tips coming up from maybe your personal life or otherwise to help people, let's say, save a little bit more this year or lower their spending?
Yeah, I think it's a tough time of year. Like, there is so much pressure on our wallets, not just kind of Christmas itself in terms of potentially things like kind of presents, but also all the expectations potentially around socializing in the lead up. You've got kind of Black Friday that you mentioned earlier in the show. You really, on these kind of topics, like from my perspective, you don't want to be too kind of preachy and telling people like how to spend their hard-earned money. Like, if you want to go out and obviously enjoy yourself over the course of the next couple of months, that's exactly what you should do. But I always say to people, just be really conscious about your spending. Have a look at your diary a couple of weeks in advance and make sure that everywhere you might be kind of going out are things that you actually want to do. If you're getting presents, maybe have conversations with kind of friends and family in advance about expectations. If you're concerned about the cost of Christmas, very likely people around you kind of will be as well. This is a conversation I had with my family over the weekend, and we've just kind of really set expectations that actually what we really want to do at Christmas is spend time together, and that's kind of the important thing from our side, rather than, as I say, kind of giving physical kind of presents. And it's really not worth, from my perspective, kind of getting into debt just over the course of just for over a couple of weeks, or presents kind of just on one day. So from my perspective, as I say, it's just being really conscious. And if you want to go out and obviously socialize and buy presents, absolutely go ahead and do that. But just make sure that it's something that you enjoy and actually want to do, rather than kind of societal expectations.
Can't agree more. I don't think it's ever too early to start discussing money saving and Christmas related questions, especially halfway through November. I'm probably late to the party. Brian, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Thanks, Gabriel.
Cheers. Guys, stick around because we've got another great interview coming up shortly, straight after this, where I've got Sabrina Grant to talk about sustainable stylist and founder of the Second Life Collective.
FUPAR Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the crying, truth. Crying. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. It is. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Jill Harrison, my SIS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, "What the fuck of those, and he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. We are live on FUBAR Radio, and I am joined live in the studio by Sabrina Grant, and like I said earlier, sustainable stylist and founder of the Second Life Collective. Sabrina, welcome to the studio. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Even though it's raining, I've got a big smile on my face.
Listen, we're inside, so rain does not affect us right now. Even though it's raining and cold and miserable and officially winter,
it's winter
and not yet Christmas,
I know,
it's fine. We are good. Sabrina, I would love you to introduce yourself to the audience and explain a little bit about who the Second Life Collective are, who you are, and maybe a little bit about how you got into sustainable fashion.
Okay, well, my name's Sabrina Grant, the Sabrina Grant on Instagram, because all the other tags are taken, so I'm the one and only.
I like it.
And my background is in TV. I'm a TV presenter, and I'm also a sustainable stylist, which actually is kind of a title I kind of gave myself.
Okay, self-proclaimed.
Yeah, self-proclaimed title. I've always had a love for pre-love fashion, and you know, kind of learning about being sustainable and living sustainably and being quite thrifty with my coin.
That works on That Money Show. That's definitely useful for us to know. Okay, so it's always kind of been part of you. I mean, sustainable fashion has become so popular recently, which is great, right? Nothing wrong with that. But why does it matter?
Well, I mean, I think everyone can start to see now how much of an impact, especially fast fashion and the fashion industry in general, is having on the planet. So we just need to be conscious. We can't kind of bury our heads in the sand. I mean, I remember a few years ago I saw on the news how where all our kind of clothing and stuff gets shipped to, and there was this massive mounting, just huge mountain of clothes, and I just couldn't believe like how much we consume. So it's having a massive impact on our environment, and I think it's an easy way for people to start to think about how they can live more sustainably. Starting with the clothes that you wear is a great place to start, you know, shopping pre-loved, basically.
I absolutely love that. And obviously this is That Money Show, and we are getting to the period of the year where I suppose pressure to spend gets a little bit more intense. Advertising from companies, both fashion and otherwise, starts to heat up. Obviously we've got Black Friday at the end of November, but then after that it goes into all the, like, there's just, it feels like it's sale after sale after sale, and whilst everyone kind of looks at that being like, isn't that a good thing, we're going to save money, unfortunately this is the period where most people fall for a lot of marketing tricks and stuff like that. So do you have tips for people during the festive season on how they can actually start to be a bit more sensible with their money whilst also still enjoying this period?
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, stay calm.
Stay calm, people.
Stay calm.
Relax.
One of my first big jobs in TV was with Channel 4, and it was a show called Super Shoppers. So I got to learn a lot about kind of the tricks of the retail trade. And at Christmas time, you know, you see it everywhere, don't you? The signs, the big red signs, sale, hurry now, limited offer. And it really is about, you know, staying calm, thinking about what do I need at this time of year. It is difficult, but I learned a lot during my time doing the show. We really dig deep. So don't let signs like sale and limited offer and stuff like that kind of force you into making purchases that you don't need. Take the time, do your research. I know Black Friday is coming up. If you do want to get involved in those sales, there are apps that you can use at the moment to kind of track the prices of stuff.
Love that.
One of the tricks that I learned is sometimes companies, they price hike just before the sale. So it looks as if, you know, they can retail something for up to, you know, 2 weeks before at a price, and then they can drop it down. So, you know, track the items that you may be interested in buying on Black Friday.
There is so much data and research out there that even say that Black Friday sales aren't worth it. They actually, like you said, because of price hiking and other things throughout the year, you actually get reduced prices even later on.
Exactly.
Because they get this huge kind of splurge, and then they've got a lot of excess product. So, you know, when January comes around, they need to shift a lot of stuff for the new year.
Yeah.
That's actually a better time to kind of shop. And there's a lot of other periods and research. One thing in particular I love, and it's a quote from Martin Lewis, you know, the money saving expert, the man of all men when it comes
apart
to
from you, of course.
Yeah, oh, thank you so much. But it's a you kind of said it in different words. Maybe he was inspired from you, but it was about how if you were going to buy something and it's on sale, please go ahead and buy it. Like, that is the perfect time. You're going to save money. But if you're buying something because you've caught your eye, you know, the big red sale sign, or you're being time pressured into something, regardless of what you pay for it and what you think you're saving, you're actually wasting the full price of whatever you spend.
Yeah.
Because you weren't going to buy it beforehand. And I think I would get that tattooed. I don't know where.
Would you?
And I'd try and refine the wording a little bit. But I absolutely would. I want to go a bit deeper into the secondhand market, because we've seen apps like Vinted and obviously eBay that's been around for ages, but it feels like it's also got a bit of a revamp. Kind of like we said, come to the height of popularity. I think one stat here says 31% of Gen Z millennial online shoppers said they've bought secondhand now. What are other kind of tips and tricks to buy and sell secondhand when it comes to this day and age?
There are so many sites out there. It's actually quite exciting to see what keeps popping up. Like right now, I'm kind of addicted to this app where they're live auctions. So anyone can get involved, sign up, make an account, and you can literally be sat in your closet and be like, this, I'm selling this now. Don't need it anymore. Start the auction. Open it up.
Just live. As you're talking.
As you're talking. You can do it from your bedroom.
What's that app called?
That app is called... Hang on a minute.
Go on, we've got to do a bit of scrolling. There's so many.
Tilt.
Okay,
I've also got
a... So you're live streaming. And you just go through your cupboard and you're just like, okay, this is now for sale and people can start bidding.
Exactly that.
That is wild.
Obviously, you've got your classic like eBay and Vinted is a very popular one as well. There's things like Depop, ThredUp, The RealReal, there's Vestiaire Collective. So, and what's great as well, you get a real kind of range of pieces. So, you know, from the high street to designer to vintage, there are so many places out there where you can kind of resell your items and, you know, extend the lifespan, make someone else happy and make yourself a bit of money as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You are clearly someone that is very fashionable.
Thank you.
Definitely compared to me that wears one colour and that colour isn't even a colour.
I'm liking your outfit today.
Thank you.
I'm liking it.
Very much. I dressed myself and everything. What are the things that you do personally to save money and stay stylish? I think that's a really hard blend to be, but you've probably got it nailed down.
Probably.
So what are your tips and tricks?
My tips for that, okay, and I've really actually stripped back, and I think that's since the pandemic and actually seeing that visual image of all the piles and piles of clothes that we all consume. My tips for staying trendy, which you can do, is basically looking at the current trends, having a plan when you want to shop pre-loved, say you want to go to a charity shop or you want to buy from one of these apps, seeing what's in fashion now and then seeing what pieces, let's say the colour of the moment is actually quite a burgundy deep red. You can put that into your search bar and you can find items that are, you know, deep red. No one's going to know. I mean, I don't really care about big labels and designers, but, you know, even if you do, you can find them at a fraction of the price using, you know, these pre-loved apps. So have a vision, you know, take some inspiration, I don't know, from an icon of yours. Look at the current trends, but then just go and find it for half the price.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose there is still this kind of trap that exists, though, where fast fashion and sustainable fashion have their interaction, where people are constantly buying the secondhand stuff. Whilst that is good, it's probably still bad for someone's wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
Great for people that are selling,
yeah.
Please, but not great for someone's wallet. So are there things that someone out there can do to kind of slow down a little bit or pick the right things that last a little bit longer?
I always say shop your own wardrobe. Like on average, about 30 items in your wardrobe go unworn throughout the year. So the first tip is to actually shop your wardrobe and go through and see, you know, rework these pieces, rewear them, try it on with something else. I like sometimes late at night I'll play dress up in my closet and I'll piece outfits together before I'm even going somewhere.
That's
quite a fun thing to do, and you're like, oh, actually, yeah, that's quite a good look. So you don't always need to go out and buy something new. That is one of my big tips.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of stuff that probably like gets pushed to the side of your wardrobe that you forget about And then you have a look at it like a year later. You're like, I haven't worn that in so long. I still own that. I've just bought the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I was literally watching this clip. And obviously social media is life, right? But I was watching this clip. And it was like, I'm not sure my wife knows what she's wearing. And it was her, this woman walking around a shop, holding the top that she's about to buy whilst wearing the exact same thing. And I think it's really important. A bit of, you know, self-introspection. And by introspection, I mean, look in that cupboard, not look inside of yourself.
Exactly. Because you are prone to kind of buy similar things. My sister-in-law, she loves stripes. And it's like, your wardrobe is stripes, stripes, stripes. And you'll go out and you'll, I've got this. I'm like, haven't you got that in your wardrobe?
Literally.
So really shop your wardrobe. And also, yeah, this overconsumption, the need to kind of want things new. I think it's more of a kind of a rush, a sort of a serotonin rush that we get as well. So I think it's looking for other ways to kind of get that joy without spending money.
I think one great tip when it comes to shopping in general is if there is something that you think you really love, it's so easy to buy. It's like one click button, buy now, right? Apple Pay, buy now. Like it's so quick. What I love to do is just let it sit in the basket. So you put it into your basket, you completely give yourself permission to buy that item, but it has to be in a week from now.
Okay.
Or 30 days from now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've done that before.
You in a week or you in 30 days or even you in 24 hours has 100% permission to buy that thing as long as you still want it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'll find in more cases than not, you'll look at it and be like, oh, I don't actually need that. I'd rather save the money because you're just getting over that initial urge to consume and to kind of like, you know, reward yourself for something. And you still get the item at the end of the day if you do want it. So that's my thing. My last question for you. What is your best buy? What is your favorite pre-loved item that you've owned?
I'm going to go back to, I remember this moment. I found a vintage Fendi bag. And that was like one of my most proudest moments. I used to work in Elstree and there's amazing charity shops there. And they've got the film studios. And I think maybe a lot of things used to get donated there. And I just got very lucky. And also I had to stay very calm and like take it to the till and be like, I'm going to get this purchase. And I love this bag. It's such a timeless piece. It goes with everything. I still have it. And it's like, I love it. I love it. It just reminds me of, you know, the unique things that you can find when shopping pre-loved. And I never would have bought that full price. So my vintage Fendi bag, which I still have,
amazing.
I love and adore.
I can see the smile on your face. You went into a different zone there.
I know, I'm like,
you were
Fendi
like, oh, what a day that was. Sabrina, where can people find out a little bit more from you if they are interested in the sustainable fashion world? I want to dive into it a little
bit. Yeah, you
more.
Can follow me on Instagram. The Sabrina Grant. That's where you'll see most of my content, sometimes sharing things and sharing my style and sustainable style and how to make it current and fresh. Also, there's, if you go on to All Four, I've just finished doing a show that is all about pre-love fashion with Vinted. It's a fantastic show. They'll give you lots more tips on how to style yourself in pre-love fashion.
Amazing. Sabrina, thank you so much. I couldn't think of a more relevant interview coming up to the lead towards Black Friday and Christmas and all that kind of stuff. So thank you for coming down
today.
Thank
you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Wicked. Well, there you go. That is the most incredible advice ever. When it comes to sustainable fashion and the rest, nothing more that I can add to that. Sabrina is the expert. So please do go follow her on all socials and watch all of the lovely TV programs she is putting out on Channel 4 and beyond. And remember, guys, stay sustainable. It's a really good thing to do in life. It is time for Money Tip of the Week that leads off the back of everything you've been hearing from my two interviews and beyond. And I kind of want to keep playing on the whole, you know, it's coming up to Black Friday, it's coming up to Christmas, and a lot of these brands are going to start putting a lot of pressure on your email inbox, etc., advertising to try and get you to essentially spend as much as possible because that's what they want you to do. I, on the other hand, have your best intentions at heart and want you to get the best deals possible and only spend on things that you actually need and want. So what I'm going to ask you to do is look into one of the following things that I am currently about to tell you. First is Keepa, K-E-E-P-A. That will track prices on Amazon and tell you how much things have cost that you are looking at over the past 6, 12, whatever months. It gives you a live chart of all of the costs so you can see whether you are or aren't getting the best price. Camel, 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 that does exactly the same. And then when it comes to general price comparisons for things that aren't just on Amazon, but from every website, I want you to look up either Price Spy, Price Runner, just Google Shopping, or Idealo. Idealo? I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but it's Idea followed by the letters L-O. All of those websites do one thing for you. They compare multiple websites, so you end up buying the thing at the lowest price point. Don't just buy it on a website because you found it there. Buy it on the one that sells it for the cheapest. There you go. A nice little bit of a money tip of the week. And money tip of the week this week is actually followed straight by scam of the week. And again, it's about staying aware when it comes to Black Friday shopping. This time last year, £11.5 million was lost to fraud because of Black Friday. That's £695 on average lost. So one thing that you can do to protect yourself from these scams is utilize the benefit of spending on a credit card. Now, credit card spending comes with extra consumer protection. Section 75, if you buy something worth between £100 and £30,000, if that item is fraudulent, doesn't turn up, doesn't come as expected, you don't have to just complain to the shop. They might not even exist. You might have bought from somewhere so dodgy. Please don't do that. Please try and buy from things that you know actually exist. But your credit card is jointly liable on that purchase, meaning you can contact your credit card, they will reimburse you, and they will do the chasing on your behalf. So that isn't me telling you to buy things on a credit card. Obviously, please be sensible and make sure you can pay off anything that you pay on a credit card, because the interest is not worth it, not even one penny worth of interest. But do take advantage of the consumer protection that you get with a credit card. So before we do end the show, which is happening in a few minutes, I know, really sad, guys. But don't worry, we're here every single week, so relax. We're getting to the part where you get to ask me the questions that you've always had about money. Every week you guys are DMing us at That Money Show on Instagram with your questions, the things you're embarrassed to ask, the things you've always wanted to ask, maybe just something that you thought of on the spot. And I get to answer it right now. So let's kick off. And remember, if you're also watching the live stream, this is your opportunity to ask me live action questions that I will answer about money. But starting with Alice, who said, quite simply, can I still get a mortgage if I am self-employed? Simple answer, Alice, yes, you can. Longer answer, it's a little bit more difficult than straight up employment. Often you need to have been self-employed or have had self-employed tax returns for at least 1 year, but more often than not, 2 or even 3 years is going to make you make life a lot easier for you. This is just obviously the life of being self-employed is a little bit more risky and banks love security. So it's not that you can't, it's just going to be a little bit harder. You might not be able to borrow as much. But this is how I did it because I'm self-employed. I went to a mortgage broker who was able to advise me on the best case scenario for me. A lot of mortgage brokers do it for free. Their service for you is completely for free. They get paid by the bank when you take out a product. So that is my advice for you. A question coming in from the live stream actually right now from Frankie. Is trading 212 safe or is there a better platform for a stocks and shares ISA? Trading 212, I believe, is FSCS protected and you should check this with any financial service that you put your money into, savings, banks, whatever it is. That is the financial service, financial security conduct, FSCS. I'll look up exactly what it stands for. I should probably know that by now. But essentially, that means that if the company that you are putting your money into, in this case, Trading 212, go disappear tomorrow, you're kind of insured by the Financial Service Compensation Scheme. Yes, I got it. I knew I had it inside of me. That means up to £85,000. Oh, someone, Adam in the comments, Financial Service Compensation Scheme. Adam, I promise it came to me before I read you post it. But I mean, I'm impressed by you as well. So that means that, again, up to £85,000 essentially insured within those accounts. If you're on over £85,000, congratulations to you for having so much money. Callum has come in with, is it still worth buying premium bonds? Premium bonds, I believe the average interest that you can now get from them did drop again. I would say there's nothing wrong with premium bonds. I don't personally love them because it's a little bit like a lottery. You kind of have to, you know, literally buy a ticket and some months you won't win. Most months you probably won't win and some months you can win. And of course you can win really, really, really high amounts. I think up to even 100,000. Is the top prize a million? The top prize is either 100,000 or a million. And I would say there's nothing wrong with them. You can add them to your arsenal of things to kind of diversify where your money is saved between investing, cash ISAs, general savings accounts, putting them into premium bonds, putting them into other things like assets such as properties or other rare things that you want to invest your money into. I don't have an issue with them at all. I have an issue when people put all of their money into premium bonds, essentially thinking that is going to be the thing that kind of, you know, takes them off. I've just been confirmed that it is £1 million as the top prize. But yeah, so I've got a few premium bonds, but I've also got a cash ISA. I've also got a stocks and shares ISA. I've also got a pension. It's just about diversification amongst lots of little things. And if premium bonds float your boat, then go for it. And last question is SIP versus company pension. So should you pay into your normal company pension that they offer you, or self-invest personal pension, where you basically get paid your money, then you can put it into your own pension and invest it your own way. One thing I just want you to always consider is, what are the company offering you? So is the company giving you some kind of benefit, match scheme, et cetera, et cetera? Because that is free money on the table. And not just that, if it's through salary sacrifice, you get a huge number of benefits. So please always look into that before considering opening a SIP. Anyway, that's everything that we've got time for today. So thank you very much to Sabrina and Brian for your excellent words of advice when it comes to all things money, and also a little bit of sustainable fashion. Thank you to you guys all for listening. And remember, you can listen to the FUBAR Radio app. You can download it and listen to us live every week. You can find us on all podcasting platforms, and you can find us on social media at That Money Show. I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And as always, you are now better with your money. Bye.